And now, an MRAP short.
It's October 2015, and if you live in the United States, new CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, edicts, or should I say core measure, might be one and the same, for managing sepsis have now gone into effect. It's a 2016 core measure, but it went live 10/1/2015. October 1st, 2015 is a little early present. Now, if you don't practice in the U.S., sit back, relax, and pour yourself a nice glass of I'm glad this doesn't apply to me. This has a lot of people concerned. Scott Weingart and Jeremy Faust just wrote a multi-page article about it in Emergency Medicine News. But what's the problem here? Why so much consternation, hand-wringing, why are knickers getting twisted, etc.? Who better to answer questions about twisting knickers and sepsis than Dr. This Is How You Should Manage Sepsis himself, Dr. Cameron Berg. Cam, what is the big issue here? What is the big deal?
The big issue about this core measure is that CMS has totally changed the definitions. So since 2001, we've been operating under one set of definitions, and that came from Manny Rivers in his seminal EGDT article. The big picture, you know me, Rob, I love ye the sepsis. It is, I think, the most important condition that we treat, and there is room for improvement on a national level. We need to pay attention to it, and we need to keep working hard. But we know from very good recent randomized trials, I mean, PROCESS, ARISE, PROMISE, that the sickest subset of sepsis patients, those with severe sepsis or septic shock, likely benefit from an aggressive, standardized resuscitation algorithm. The other patients, we don't know so much. And CMS has changed it. They've made up their own new definitions, and they've greatly expanded the denominator without citing any convincing evidence.
We'll get into that in a second, but is this going to be tied to reimbursement or whether or not your hospital can stay open? Is there some sort of penalty for not abiding by the CMS core measure?
Core measures are kind of a weird thing. I mean, they are supposed to be level 1A non-controversial evidence, the kind of thing that every doctor and every hospital across the country should be doing. I mean, we're talking about like aspirin for MI. And now they've evolved into a much murkier thing. So the short answer to your question is, beginning now, there is not money tied to this. But it is publicly reported. So that's the kind of stuff that ideally consumers can look at when they're looking at health grades. But certainly insurance companies, you know, the payers look at this. And the idea behind core measures is clearly that we initially start by measuring and publicizing our performance, and then it evolves into a value-based purchasing arena whereby money does get tied to it. Right off the bat, no money, just reporting, but I think most of us believe that it's moving in that direction.
Let's break down the main points. First off, the definitions. You say that the definitions are changing. I don't really know what that means. Well, I know what it means when you change definitions, but specifically here, I don't know.
I'm just going to rehash this kind of briefly. I'm not going to go over all the exact cutoffs and details. If you're interested in it, we'll include a link in the show notes. And I also want to give props to Scott and Jeremy for doing a really good job kind of looking at where this all came from. Let's start with where we've been for the last 15 years. Sepsis is SIRS attributed to a suspected clinical infection. So that's what sepsis is. And then we have two tiers of sicker patients on top of that. So think of sepsis as being the big pie, and then we chop off two other sections of the sickest patients. That starts with severe sepsis, which for the last 15 years has been sepsis plus a very high lactate. And that high lactate has always been 4.0 or higher, and that has been cited as evidence of severe end organ dysfunction. And then the final tier, the sickest of the sick, are those with septic shock, which you'll recall is sepsis plus persistent hypotension despite a crystalloid fluid challenge.
I can get behind this. It's simple. I got three things. I actually know these three things. I'm feeling good about myself. All right.
So that's where we've been for 15 years. And what we've learned is that those two sickest cohorts, the severe sepsis and the septic shock, they really, really matter. What does CMS say? They use the same language. They use the term severe sepsis and septic shock, but they've totally changed the definitions. So now for them, severe sepsis equals end organ dysfunction as evidenced by any one of many potential abnormal lab tests. So they say a high creatinine, a high bilirubin, low platelets, high INR, or abnormal lactate. And when we're talking about abnormal lactate, this is the big issue. Severe sepsis for the purposes of CMS equals a lactate of 2.0 and up. So the problem with this is there is no evidence to support that, and we are radically increasing the denominator of patients that we're going to end up calling severe sepsis. So in our own work at my institution, 70% of our sepsis patients have a lactate of 2 and up. We're now saying that 3/4 of patients with sepsis will be categorized as severe sepsis for the purposes of this CMS core measure.
Now, how does that make such a difference when you are managing the patient at the bedside? If a lactate of 2 versus a lactate of 4, say you're not chasing lactates and doing your, you're not doing your goal-directed therapy, because now it's just kind of like we're giving empiric fluids and this, that. I mean, what difference does it make? They're sick, they're going to get admitted to the hospital.
The funny thing about this CMS core measure is they've bundled together a whole bunch of elements in one. And you either pass or you fail. You don't get kind of partial credit for adhering to it. And why it matters is because they have two different bundles of care that they're requiring you to deliver in order to get a pass. So the first is the 3-hour bundle, and this applies to all patients who qualify as having sepsis. So all patients. What you need to do for that cohort of patients is check their lactate. So I certainly agree with that. And then if that lactate is 2 or up, or they have any of those other weird abnormal blood tests, you have to give broad spectrum antibiotics. You have to check blood cultures before those antibiotics are administered, and you have to recheck the lactate. The weird thing about this is they do not give you an out if the patient has abnormal lab values at baseline. So say you have a little old lady who runs a creatinine of 2.5 every single day, or you have a patient that has baseline thrombocytopenia, or you have a patient that's on warfarin, the CMS regulation doesn't mention any of those things, which means those patients by definition have severe sepsis every time they come in. So I think it's a bad idea to obligate this kind of aggressive care in the absence of evidence. We know from the old pneumonia debacle years ago that this idea of requiring every hospital to get antibiotics in within a certain period of time, I mean, you remember that was 4 hours, this is now 3 hours, paradoxically resulted in detrimental outcomes because we have a limited number of resources. And if we're applying all of our resources to try to hit this arbitrary 3-hour cutoff, we're going to be ignoring other patients.
Is this 3-hour bundle applicable to flu patients because they all have suspected infection and SIRS?
The short answer is just like we talked about in the pathway a couple of months ago, this is intended to apply to infections attributed to a bacterial source.
Okay.
Now, of course, you don't know that up front. If somebody presents with a flu syndrome, it could be bacterial pneumonia, it could be viral, which means you're going to start enrolling them until the tests come back and then you can throw them out.
So we've got a couple problems here. We've got that organ dysfunction is low blood pressure or high creatinine or high bili or low platelets or high INR or an abnormal lactate. There's nothing in there to account for baseline, and the abnormal lactate level has gone from greater than 4 to greater than 2, which is going to increase the number of patients who are entered into this. Is that going to be bad for patients, though?
I think it is. We're all increasingly aware of this idea of overdiagnosis and overtreatment. So even if we had a healthcare system that had infinite resources, which we clearly don't, doing more is not always doing better by our patients. And I want to be clear that I'm aware of no randomized evidence that supports this kind of aggressive intervention in these patients.
So that's our 3-hour bundle. Take me to 6 hours.
So the 6-hour bundle applies only to those patients with septic shock. Now, interestingly, just like CMS changed the definition of severe sepsis, they changed the definition of septic shock as well. So there's two ways you can qualify as having septic shock in their world. The first is having hypotension refractory to a pretty good fluid challenge. They say 30 milliliters per kilo. I don't think many of us argue with that. That sounds like true septic shock. But the second is you just have sepsis plus a lactate of 4.0 or higher. So remember, we used to call that severe sepsis. They now lump that in septic shock. So just to rehash, the 3-hour bundle applies to all patients with this new definition of severe sepsis. The 6-hour bundle applies only to those patients who end up having septic shock, as evidenced by hypotension refractory to fluids or a lactate greater than 4. And what they say that you need to do in these patients is start vasopressors. I think that sounds reasonable. And then they require you to do some kind of clinical or invasive assessment of volume status and tissue perfusion. The language gets really convoluted here. So it's this Boolean kind of and or, and I'll try to summarize it as clearly as I can. You have two possible methods for doing this volume status tissue perfusion assessment. The first is you put in a central line and you check the CVP and the SCVO2, or you do a bedside ultrasound and look at the IVC, or you do this passive leg raise fluid challenge thing. That's method one. You do one of these semi-invasive methods. You need a central line or an ultrasound or this passive leg raise thing. If you don't want to do that, and I would recommend that people don't put in central lines unless central lines are necessary for vasopressor administration, you can get away with it by doing something that they're calling a focused clinical exam. And that focused clinical exam requires you to write a specific note citing the vitals, the cardiopulmonary status, the capillary refill, the peripheral pulses, and a skin exam. When's the last time that you've checked capillary refill on an adult patient, Rob?
You mean, when was the first time? Which I don't know if it's happened yet. I don't know, maybe on a...
Exactly. It's totally weird stuff.
Maybe somebody's got a crush injury to their finger.
I'll check it. So it's totally weird stuff. And just like we were talking about with this 3-hour bundle, there's really no evidence to support this kind of kooky, invasive assessment of volume status or doing this weird exam. Finally, there's a problem with this whole bundle as well, which is there's no exclusion for clinical judgment. So let's say I have an 85-year-old patient. He has an EF of 15%. He's on hemodialysis. And he comes in now with a lactate of 4.5, but a normal blood pressure from pneumonia. So CMS says, I'm supposed to give that guy 30 milliliters per kilo, and there's no passing go. Doesn't matter that he's got a terrible heart and terrible kidneys. We've taken this to some totalitarian extreme that does not account for clinical judgment at all.
So there's things about this that, to me, don't seem bad. For patients in septic shock, you give them some fluids, you start vasopressors if they're so hypotensive, you check volume status. Now, I'm a fan of bedside ultrasound. Some people like the leg raise. That's all good. This, you know, if you're going to be doing CVPs, SVO2, whatever, this focused exam, very weird. And expanding the definition of septic shock to include patients with lactate over 4, but who are not persistently hypotensive,
right,
or hypotensive.
Right.
And then are you supposed to start vasopressors on them even if they are normotensive?
You're not supposed to start vasopressors on them. So the vasopressor thing does apply only to the hypotension. But I think all in all, you're totally on point, Rob. I mean, the idea behind standardizing care of the sickest sepsis patients nationwide makes sense. And I totally support that. A CMS core measure about this topic is probably timely and appropriate. What isn't okay is the way that they've totally changed these definitions. They're skewing things towards the less sick side of the spectrum, and they're really requiring an excess amount of interventions in these patients without any evidentiary base. You know, I support the concept of the core measure. I just don't support these details.
So we've got the problems listed out. Are these things that could harm patients, or are they more of a pain in the butt for us? Is this just throwing money away without evidence behind it?
I don't know. I mean, I think only time will tell. I do suspect that there are going to be some clinical sites that are really going to try to hit 100% or as close to 100% as they can. And like I said, there's no exclusions for these patient baselines, and there's no exclusions for clinical judgment. So I can tell you with certainty that there are some patients who would be harmed by 30 milliliters per kilo of crystalloid if they have all of these comorbidities that I mentioned above. And I can tell you with confidence that there are some patients who are going to be harmed by the rush to get antibiotics in 3 hours. And I can tell you that there are some patients that are going to be harmed by the concept of drawing blood cultures, not drawing source of infection cultures. So I do think that there are problems to this that will result in the harm of patients.
So what should we do? Should we have a sit-in? Should we do a letter writing campaign and speak to the reason of the writers of this? Because there had to be physicians involved in this. You think of just a faceless administrator sitting down thinking, oh yeah, well, what sounds sepsis-y? No, these are physicians, I'm sure, well experienced.
I think so. I think so.
So what do you do? What should we do?
I think we're just starting to initiate this conversation right now. When these core measures were proposed in detail earlier in the year, there were a lot of us who were very confident that it was ultimately going to get shelved shelved or tabled or amended before it went live. That hasn't happened. So it's gone live now. And I think what we need to do is kind of rise up and have a common voice and say, we're trying to take care of these patients. We agree that sepsis matters, but this isn't the way to do it. So log in, give me your contact info, type in the show notes, and let's put together something collectively, because I think, you know, we can do better about this. I agree that lactate screening is good. I mean, I agree that giving aggressive fluids and vasopressors to those patients with genuine septic shock matters. I just don't agree with these 3 and 6 hour bundles.
Well, it sounds like something for the big organizations like ASAP and AAEM. And
amen.
To get behind and say, hey, let's be sensible about this. We want to take care of patients. We want to do it in the right way, with right way being the operative phrase, evidence-based right way.
Exactly. I just hope that we're not in the place 12 months from now where you go to your shift and there's some administrator with a clipboard trying to, you know, make you do these things in order to manage the hospital scorecard. And I'm fearful that that's the direction that we're heading.
Oh, Cam, they're already there.